Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant friends. Welcome to episode 90 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Holy moly, plant friends. Episode 90 of Bloom and Grow Radio. I am so thankful, so humbled, so in awe that we are at 90 episodes. And what better to celebrate our 90th episode than to have one of the other OG houseplant podcasters as my guest today, the one and only Jane Perrone of On the Ledge Podcast. Before we get into that, I just want to catch up. I hope you all had wonderfully planty weeks as per usual. I spent the week dreaming and scheming about our balcony garden. It's been unusually cold in New York. I'm really ready for it to warm up, but I spent the week, we had a few warm days, standing on my balcony, which is absolutely tiny. I measured it. It's about 9 square feet, if you can picture it, standing on it, letting it speak to me and figuring out exactly what I'm going to grow. It's my intention to grow as much as I can in my small 9 square feet garden that I've got going on. So I don't know if you saw on my Instagram, but I actually ended up making a to scale version of the balcony garden. And then I made to scale movable pieces of paper that represented all of the different planters that I had. And I mixed and matched the planters and their orientation on the balcony to see how many planters I could fit. I pinned the whole crazy plant lady moment on my pinned Instagram stories if you want to go and see how I made the to scale model and went crazy with it. So that's my update. I hope you are using your plants to stay sane, healthy, and happy as well. If you haven't taken the Plant Parent Personality Test, I think you should. For those of you that don't know, the Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test is an online test. It takes 2 minutes to complete. And once you complete it, you get sorted into one of 5 personalities that I've kind of profiled for you, what type of plant parent you are, how your personality and lifestyle affects what plants you should have in your home. And then you get recommended plants, projects, and podcasts that are tailored to you. Because now at 90 episodes, you probably might be overwhelmed if you're a new listener where to start, or if you're an older listener, maybe there are some episodes you missed that actually might really be helpful for you in your space. So you can check out the link in the show notes to take it and let me know what your personality is on Instagram. It's been so fun seeing all of your personality test results. So I'm so excited to finally have Jane Perrone of On the Ledge Podcast on the show today. Jane and I have both been podcasting for almost 3 years now. And as you'll hear, if we do say so ourselves, we're the OG planty houseplant podcasters that hit the airwaves. And we also joke it's only taken us 3 years and a pandemic to actually pull ourselves out of the production of our own podcasts to finally actually talk with each other. So we did a little bit of a podcast collaboration this week. Jane interviews me on her podcast, On the Ledge Pod. You can go find it. And I interview Jane today. And it's been really fun getting to know Jane over the past week where we've done all of our interviews. And because we both have amazing communities of Patreon supporters, we actually made a little bit of extra content that is going to go out only to our Patreon plant friends. So Patreon plant friends, look in your inboxes this week because I'll be sending you, it's an extra episode Jane and I put together. And it is all about the behind the scenes aspect of our podcasting. So thank you to our Patreon supporters, our Patreon plan friends. We have some new ones in the mix this week. Lucy May Barker, Kimmy Gerard, Nikki Robinson. Thank you for joining our community. Patreon plant friends are supporters who support Bloom and Grow monetarily every month for as little as a cup of coffee. And you guys help me bring the show to as many people as humanly possible across the world. I checked the stats for Bloom and Grow and we are distributed. I mean, we have listeners in every country. It is absolutely unbelievable. So if you're interested in supporting Bloom and Grow and helping me continue to make the show, you guys cover my editor and more now, you can check the link in the show notes. That's all I have for you today, plant friends. But before we talk to one of the OG plant podcasters, I want to tell you about one of my OG favorite planty product companies and today's sponsor, Modern Sprout. Plan friends, you know I adore Modern Sprout. They make simple, stylish, and sustainable green thumb solutions for every home, no matter what size your home is, what your lighting situation is. They have a grow light and a grow kit and accessory for you. They are connecting people to plants with their smart grow lights, their seed starter kits, and their hydroponic grow kits, and their amazing planty accessories. And plan friends, with Mother's Day coming up, I cannot think of a better gift to get your mamas than something from the Modern Sprout catalog, because they have so many amazing things. So they just released their new smart grow lights, which not only are so easy to install and so gorgeous, but they sync with the Modern Sprout app on your phone, and they allow you to customize the lighting schedule for the needs of the plants that you're growing under those specific lights. So I have two lights on two different schedules set up in my apartment. And if you're curious about the installation of the grow bar or the grow house, you can check out this week's YouTube video where I show my installation of those products in my home. In addition to the grow lights, Modern Sprout has a wide array of hydroponic grow kits and seed starter setups for every person. So if you're looking to grow some herbs indoors, maybe start some seeds indoors that you're ultimately going to plant outdoors, and that's actually what I'm doing with their grow kit. So I'm starting my cherry tomato plants and some sunflowers in their grow kits indoors right now under the grow bar. Or if you even want to grow your own aromatherapy like lavender or chamomile, they have a kit for you, and they put them together in such pleasing fun ways. And they have tons of planty accessories. I love their snippers, and I love their herb pincher bowl as well. So Mother's Day is coming, and seriously, I can't think of a better gift for your deserving mothers than something from the Modern Sprout catalog. And on top of that, they have special discounted bundles for you at amazing prices, starting at only $35. So what better gift to get than the gift of growing for our moms, or for yourself? You know, sometimes you need a little treat too. So to check out everything Modern Sprout has to offer, visit modernsprout.com and type in 15bloom to get 15% off at checkout. And that code is redeemable for everything on the website except for the already discounted bundles. So once again, that's modernsprout.com and use code 15bloom to get 15% off at checkout. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy, and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. All right, cool. So we're recording.
Hello. This has been a long time brewing, hasn't it?
I know. So long, Jane. We've been literally emailing, I think, for at least 2 years on trying to get on each other's shows. And it only took international pandemic to get us to finally have some time to connect.
I know. It's a strange state of affairs right now, isn't it? But I'm glad we've been, as I say, when I first, gosh, when did your podcast start? When did you first?
November. I launched November of 2017.
That's right. Because I remember thinking, oh my gosh, thank goodness somebody else is doing a houseplant podcast, because it had felt very lonely when I started in February 2017. There was literally nothing else.
And I know. We're the OGs.
We are the OGs. So it was really good to see you starting out, and then other plant podcasts coming into the arena is really good. And I have had people say, ooh, didn't you feel like threatened? I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's not how podcasts work. If you're into houseplants, you don't just listen to one podcast. You listen to all the plant podcasts. So
yeah. It's funny because when I had launched Bloom and Grow, I don't know if it was because I was on like the American version of iTunes, but I didn't find your show until after I had launched mine. And then right. I started listening to your show and I was like, oh man, she's really good. I was walking around thinking I was the first houseplant podcast, like all proud. And then I was like, oh, I'm not. I'm the first American houseplant podcast. But I love that we're qualming. You know, sometimes people tell, you know, if I love your show, I have listened to your show since I found it and I've consumed many of your episodes, and I will refer like your episode on carnivorous plants is like one of my favorites that you've done. And I'll recommend that to people all the time because I don't have an episode on it. And I think you do a great job on it. And sometimes I feel like if I talk about you, people are like, oh, but isn't she your competition? And I think we're here to publicly say, no, you can happily listen to both of our podcasts. We're happy to have you. And realistically, I think we have really different shows, even though the subject matter is the same. You have such a history of understanding plant care, and you have such a knowledge that you educate by yourself with. And I really approach things as such a novice and have had to learn so much, not to say that you're not always learning as well. And I don't know, I just think the styles of our show are so different as well. There's plenty of space at the table for everyone. And if you look at any other industry, look at the self-help industry, like how many podcasts are there on personal growth or personal finance or business? So why can't there be a lot of educational opportunities for our community as well, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And every show has a different personality stamped on it. And
yeah,
as you say, your perspective is going to be different from mine. And there's going to be a few people who, for whom my English accent may grate, and that is absolutely fine. There's lots of people who love my English accent, so it's fine. And I think, I guess I'm coming at it as a journalist with a very sort of thick skin, but also an appreciation of the fact that I hate the phrase you are your brand, but you kind of are, you're putting your personality out there in the show. And so it's just up to the listener to sort of decide if what you're offering is the kind of thing they want. And I'm sure like Bloom and Grow Radio, On the Ledge has evolved as I've gone along.
Oh yeah.
As I've learned, because although I'd done presenting before and a podcast before, I'd not done the whole shebang before myself. So, you know, I've learned loads in the process, and things that I did in episode one, I wouldn't do now, but that's fine. And
that's growth, right?
So it must be okay.
We had little seeds podcasts, and now they're like 3-year-old robust plants. And of course, they're going to change.
I remember like early episodes, like literally Googling how to do stuff in Audacity, the audio editing software that I was using, like, what does this button do? But I still managed to turn out a show, even though I didn't know what I was doing. So yeah, you just go along and try to get the best out of the knowledge you have at the time. So
100%.
I mean, I also like to people to tell me when I make mistakes as well, because we all make mistakes, and my listeners, just like yours, are just full of information and knowledge. So it's really great to have feedback, positive and negative, about how I can improve. I mean, my husband laughs at me, but I am a real believer in lifelong learning, and also that I'm constantly trying to improve myself to learn more about plants and to get better at things. And so, yeah, a bit of criticism is always well received, provided it's given in love.
Absolutely. And I love the idea that we're finally getting to have this conversation, the idea that I interview you on my show and you interview me on your show, because the fun thing is, in these 3 years, for the most part, we're interviewing other people and we're asking them all these questions about themselves and learning. And I think our listeners learn about us through that, through our interrogation practices. But it's fun to actually just sit down and me get to just learn more about you, and the sides of the table get flipped and you get to be the interviewee right now.
Exactly.
Which is so
I'm
fun.
Feeling the pressure.
I know. Yeah, exactly. So much pressure. So how to get started, like how has quarantine been for you, and how has your, I know that I am seeing all of your really fun Instagram content you've been putting out during quarantine, but how have you been using your plants to kind of help ease the panic of quarantine?
Well, I'm really super lucky in that I have a house with a garden, which is, well, I don't know how long it is. I think I'm going to say 80 foot sounds really long, but it's a reasonable sized garden with a bike shed, a tool shed, and a sort of greenhouse come shed. So jealous. I'm very lucky to have that outside space. So I've been doing a lot in the garden. The lawn has never been more mowed. Plus, I've been doing a lot with my houseplants, which had been a bit neglected. So I am super lucky in that respect. And I really do feel for people who are in spaces without outside spaces, because in homes without outside spaces, because that must be more tough. I also live really close to beautiful places to walk. I live really close to a river and lots of places where I can leave my front door and within 5 minutes I'm in an open field. So that's super lucky. So I'm really blessed at the minute, and I can't think of anyone better to be locked down with than my husband and kids, even though occasionally they drive me a little bit nuts. And of course my dog Wolfie, who listeners to my podcast will
know
about.
Wolfie's like a star in himself, I feel like.
Oh my gosh, he deserves his own podcast completely. He's awesome. He's great because he is an unofficial emotional support dog. So he's getting lots of, he loves this. He's getting 24/7 attention.
Yeah.
Like, we're not leaving the house. He's going to be so traumatized when it goes back to normal and we'll be going out. I mean, to be fair, I work at home, so he doesn't get left very much anyway. But yeah, he's enjoying this time very much. So for me, it's lovely. I've been doing all this extra content, which I don't know what happened. I must have had a sort of a slightly off-kilter day where I thought, yes, I need to do more podcasting. But what's been really good, so I started this, doing these daily Instagram videos. And I'm sure you had this as well when you started your podcast, that although I've done a heck of a lot of radio over the years as a journalist, I didn't like the sound of my own voice when I started the podcast. Fortunately, when you're making a podcast, you very quickly get over that because you have to listen to yourself endlessly. And it was a bit the same with Instagram and my face, in that I hadn't done a lot of Instagram videos because I just thought, oh God, I hate seeing myself on camera. And then I just thought, get over yourself. Nobody cares what your face looks like. Just do it. So,
and you've got such a good face.
Well, thank you. Well, so again, you just get over yourself and go, stop being so silly. It's fine. So I've been making these Instagram videos, and some days I'm like wearing makeup. Some days I'm not. When I'm working, I do try to, like, this works for me personally, to get dressed up, put a brooch on. I always have a brooch on.
Yes, your brooches.
If I've got some makeup on, that makes me feel good. But I don't do that every day for the video. It just depends. So that's been really nice because people seem to like those little videos. And I've been doing extra podcast stuff as well. So it's been a busy old time, in summary.
How convenient that this pandemic is hitting, as for most of us, spring is coming. So we have so many chores, especially prepping our houseplants for spring. Like, there's so much to do. We can repot, we can trim, we can prune, we can, at least it's not the dead of winter when all of our plants are kind of dormant and there's nothing to really do and care for.
So true. I mean, there is so much to do, and I've been slightly pandemic panic ordering plants as well. So I've got some new plants arrived, and yeah, there's so much repotting to do and some pest issues as always. Actually, this is one thing I wanted just to raise with you, and I find it really, really interesting with pests. It's just one of the messages I'm trying to get across to listeners at the minute is pests are normal. So I'm getting lots of messages from somebody who's kind of new into houseplants in the last 6 months or a year, and they've not experienced any pests, and they suddenly find one tiny little aphid and they freaking out. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of trying to say, look, this is normal. If you have an ongoing houseplant collection, probably 5-10% of your plants are going to have a pest all the time. That's just normal. So that's my little rant over. But yeah, I'm trying to get that message across because I think people assume that zero pests is the norm, and it really isn't. So,
and that pests are like an indicator of whether or not you're a good plant parent.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, if you have pests, you failed in some way.
I think if you spot pests, that's a sign that you're a good plant person.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes spotting them early is the key. So yeah, spotting pests means that you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had some plants. I put some cuttings in potting soil the other day. And naturally, when you pot up new cuttings, you keep the soil a little more moist to help the roots transition. And all of a sudden I had fungus gnats for the first time in like years. And instead of like taking it personally and making it about me, I was like, oh yeah, this happens. How interesting. Okay. Let me like remind myself how to treat fungus gnats. Cause it's been a minute, you know, but it's completely okay. It's totally okay. So you mentioned that you're quarantined with your husband and your children. So I'm so curious, how does your husband and your kids, how do they relate to your crazy plant lady and you?
They don't relate in the slightest.
No.
Well, to be fair, my son actually planted up, I found this window mounted planter that had been sat in my shed for ages. And we planted that up with plants the other day with some succulents and put that on the window. So that was kind of fun, but they're not interested at all. My husband's not interested. Mm. Which is fine. Like, I mean, I would not want him to be interested, because if he was interested, he'd be having opinions about things which I might disagree with. I'm not interested in his football team.
Yeah. And then you get all the plant care and all the plant love to yourself. Like, you don't have to
exactly.
share.
I don't have to compromise on what I'm doing, because he's like, well, I would prefer if you got this kind of calathea. He just wouldn't even. So that's absolutely fine. He indulges me and is very tolerant of having lots of plants around the place, but he's not interested in the slightest. But yeah, so we've got our own passions in life, and that's absolutely fine. And the kids, the kids are constantly complaining that it's kind of turning into a jungle. I'm like, I haven't even started. This is going to get way worse. But they just let me get on with it, which is fine. I think actually they are learning things through osmosis, though. I'm sure that they know more than they think they do. But I've been trying to daily walks with my son. I've been trying to educate him about various kind of weeds that I'm interested in and stuff. So whenever we come across somewhere where there's loads of daisies or dandelions, he'll be like, it's a pollinator's paradise, which is a phrase.
Oh, that's so cute.
So I think it's all going in somewhere.
I remember one of your episodes a while ago, you talking about renting space in your daughter's room for your sew-along seedlings or something, right?
Yeah, that's true. That never actually happened, because she's moved her room around now and she doesn't have a desk in front of the window anymore. But I've sort of moved things around, so I've got grow lights. But yeah, she's got the sunniest south-facing room, which is rather annoying. But
I remember you talking about it being like a negotiation a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She would definitely be looking at some kind of like return benefit for herself. Definitely. There would be no doubt about that. But she doesn't have any plants in her room. I'd say my son's just got this planter. But again, and people are like, oh, why don't you fill their rooms with plants? I'm like, because
it's their room.
Yeah, it's their room. If they don't want plants in it, that's absolutely fine. I'm not going to force that on them. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, like most people do not get into plants until they have their own place, right? I'm abnormal. I was into plants from a very young age. That's not the normal state of affairs. So I give them time. Give them time.
So what was your journey? So you've been into them ever since you were a kid, and this has been kind of a lifelong hobby for you?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember not having a fascination with plants. And as a child, I don't really know where I got them all from. I remember going into Woolworths, which is sort of a department store here in the UK. So this is kind of, so I was born in the 70s. So this is like during the 80s. And they always had like a display, like a shelving thing with all full of houseplants. And I remember going in there and buying a calceolaria, which is a very, very out of fashion pot plant with these amazing like slipper like yellow flowers. And I remember buying that and just being obsessed with it and being like, this is amazing. I mean, inevitably it died because it's a pot plant. It's not a permanent thing, but I love that plant. And then I just ended up getting lots of cacti and succulents and was amazed when they flowered at a very young age. I remember sowing parsley under our kitchen window. I remember we had quite a big, relatively big front garden. I remember being out in the front garden. And my dad was a very old, well, he wasn't old school at the time. It was current at the time. But we had like a real kind of 70s, 80s front garden with African marigolds and red salvias. And I used to go and stroke bumblebees that were landing on these African marigolds.
Wow.
So yeah, it's always been there. It's always been there for me. And I can't really explain why, other than I guess there's a bit of a history of gardening on both sides of the family. And my dad was a self-taught gardener, and my mum's dad was a self-taught gardener. He had five allotments, which are kind of I don't, do you have allotments in America? Like sort of you rented a space on a site to grow vegetables, basically.
Oh, like a community garden.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he had five plots, which was a really big amount of space. That's like three or four tennis courts worth of space.
Wow.
He made greenhouses from scratch and had a fully functioning hot water boiler system to heat them.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, I often think of him. Unfortunately, by the time I knew him, he was quite elderly and I didn't pump him for information. So maybe those gardening genes were there, but I was always into plants from a young age. And I guess during my like 20s, that probably was the leanest period where I lived overseas and stuff. And then as soon as I came back to the UK and had my own place, I started to sort of build up a collection again. And I mean, as a journalist, I was kind of started off as a news journalist, and that was all great. So I was at The Guardian from 2000 to 2017. And the first half of that was in news journalism. Mm-hmm. And then I went on maternity leave with my daughter. And like it'd been quite 2000 to 2007, if you can remember back, was quite a punishing news period, including 9/11, London bombings. There were loads of Iraq war. So being working and breaking news at the time, it was quite exhausting. So when the job of gardening editor came up at The Guardian, I was like, actually, that would be really nice.
Wow.
To get off the news treadmill. And I'd just written a book about allotments for The Guardian. So I applied for that job and I got it. So then I spent the second half of my time at The Guardian being gardening editor in a delightful backwater as it was. And that was lovely. So that was kind of cemented my gardening knowledge. But I didn't really get to do anything on houseplants. So hence, eventually, On the Ledge came along.
That's amazing. And so I know that you've also mentioned that you've taken courses. Did you take courses in horticulture while you were gardening editor, or that only happened after On the Ledge came along?
I started studying. So I've taken half. I should be taking the last two exams in June, but that's not going to happen now. But I'm taking a course called the RHS, which is Royal Horticultural Society Level 2 Certificate. And it comes in 8 units, and each one covers different aspects of horticulture. There's a lot of stuff on taxonomy, botany, growing vegetables, garden design. And there's one unit which is about protected cultivation, which includes houseplants. So I've taken 6 exams. I've got my results for 4 exams so far, awaiting my results for the last 2 I took. So I'm almost through those qualifications. And that was a really good way of cementing knowledge. Although I was amazed by how much information there was in that course to learn. I mean, I really salute anyone who does it from scratch, because it was really hard work. So that was good, because I wanted to have a piece of paper to say, I know about this stuff, as well as kind of just my experiential learning, because I come from a journalistic background, not from a horticulture background. So yeah, that's been really fun to do, but I'll be glad when it's over.
Are your courses virtual?
Yeah, so I've been taking that as an online course run by the Royal Botanic Garden Edinburgh. And that's been great, but it's really hard to self-motivate when you don't have to go to a class every week. You just got to
just keep showing up.
Yeah, that's really hard. But I'm getting there. And as I say, I'll probably take the last 2 exams now, not in this June, but hopefully in February next year. But lots of people have asked me about it. And I would say it's one of those things where, that I know of, there isn't a course that's kind of accredited for specifically for indoor gardening, but that course does give you a really good oversight of botany and taxonomy, and things are useful to know if you're into houseplants. But yeah, it depends how deep you want to go.
Yeah, I have just started taking, the biggest gift I'm giving to myself during the quarantine is like just overloading myself with online courses in a lot of different areas. I mean, maybe to a point where it's like a little too much, but I just started taking courses with the New York Botanical Garden, and they have a certificate program as well, which I'm considering doing. I'm taking it just class by class right now, because it's like a 2-year program with them. But even if there isn't a course in indoor gardening, I'm finding my soil science class that I'm taking right now, like even though 90% of what we're talking about is about outdoor soil, I am able to apply the basics of those lessons to my indoor plants in like amazing ways, because you're understanding the why under all of it. So, you know, drainage, people talk about drainage for their outdoor soils, but it made so much more sense and really like knocked it deep in my brain on why drainage is so important and how to amend it and what to amend it with and all this kind of stuff. And it's one thing to like watch a YouTube video with someone who specializes in indoor plants, like just telling you what they know compared to taking a course where you actually learn the science and physics of drainage. You know, like it's just such a deeper integration.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. It's worth doing. And it just makes you hungry for more knowledge and eager to find out exactly how everything works. And I think in the world of houseplants, there is a lot of poor information out there. Like, I've had enough of listicles about, need houseplants to clean your air, you know.
So or those videos where it's like all these crazy plant, the plant hacks where it's like, the succulent leaves in a like plastic bottle with holes in it and it'll grow the roots.
The rose in the potato and all that. And I think what I try to do with that is it's trying to sort of gently say, it's really great that you've shown an interest. All I'm trying to do is give you a pointer that not everything you read online is worthwhile. So you have to have that little kind of, sort of caveat without sort of patronizing people, that sometimes just to point them in a different direction is useful. But then again, as I said to somebody today, you can try breaking the rules. You can experiment and see what works for you. And it may be that you have great success with that, but you need to know that you're breaking the rules in order to break the rules, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, experiments are so fun and you should do all of them. But even just my teacher isn't really encouraging us to, when we do our homework or do our projects, like find scientific articles instead of just like blogs. And I just feel like I read blogs, you know, that's been my whole education in houseplants really. So it's just holding me a little bit more accountable to like find the good stuff, you know?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, that's great.
So speaking of houseplants, what is your like favorite houseplant of the moment right now? Has it shifted since you've been home?
I am still totally head over heels in love with my strawberry saxifrages, which I did a whole episode on. Mm-hmm. And they're so good. They're just so good. I can't tell you. I realized that I made an error in the episode I did about that because I was talking about putting them in terracotta pots. And they did fine in terracotta pots over the summer. And then over the winter, they really suffered in terracotta. So I've now put them all into plastic. And there was one left in terracotta that I just changed over. And literally in about 2 days from being like all wizened and dry to being lush and amazing. I just think they're incredible. I'm just so in love with them.
What is it about them that makes you love them so much?
I love just the hairy leaves, the shape of the leaves, amazing textures of the leaves, and these incredible stolons or runners that they put out with baby plants on the bottom. I mean, I just think that's how much more generous can you get? So yeah, their overall look is incredible. And I kind of also have to admit, I like the fact that they're not that popular. You know, I know there's a whole amazing world of people who are nuts about aroids. And I kind of I really like aroids, but they're never going to be my favorite plants because I guess I always like to go against the flow and like gesneriads and saxifrages and things that other people are like, what? Why would you want to have those? So yeah, that's my little take on it. So yeah, I love those. And what else am I getting excited about at the minute? Just thinking, cacti and succulents are always going to be a big thing for me. And I've just moved my succulents back out to the greenhouse. I'm slightly panicking because sunburn is a big issue, taking the succulents from the house into the house. So they're all covered in fleece at the minute. Annoyingly, I've had one, I'm just looking around, it's down here on the floor. It was in massively deep shade, this Echeveria argovoides, and it's still got sunburn. So I'm a bit annoyed about that. So yeah, cacti and succulents, I'm always obsessed with. So yeah.
That's amazing because I struggle with them so much. I feel like you have to have just such crazy light. Do you have them under grow lights or do you have them in your hair?
So in the summer, mine are in the greenhouse, which is obviously much, much lighter than my house. Mm-hmm. So they are very happy up there. This winter, I've had them in my office under grow lights, and I have had some problems with some plants that were kind of on the edges and weren't close enough to the grow lights with etiolation. Some things have been fine. Most things have been fine because it's kind of cold in here in the winter. It's about anything between about 10 and 18 degrees, depending on whether I'm in here. So they tend to kind of just slow down and stop growing. But some of them have gone a bit etiolated, which is annoying. But yeah, next winter, because we're in a bit of transition at the minute, because this office was primarily my husband's previously, but now for various reasons, it's kind of turning into my domain. So all of the vinyl and CDs and football programs that are in here are being moved into the house. So I'm going to have a big bookshelf to put my plants on. So I'm going to have more grow lights.
How many plants do you have right now and how many grow lights do you have right now?
Oh my God. Well, my son has done some counting occasionally. I've never dared to count. I would say I've probably got at least 200 plants, I would say.
Wow.
Well, maybe more. I don't know. And then grow light wise, I've got one grow light in my living room, which is where my aroids mainly are. And then I've got three grow lights out the back here for cacti and succulents in the winter, which have now moved elsewhere for seedlings. So I don't have a huge amount of grow lights, but I mean, it's not completely dark in here. It's just not ideal. It's not as light as it could be. So yeah, I don't like to count plants because it's too scary.
Yeah.
I just bought a load more.
Would you say you have, like, what would be the most rare? Someone asked me that the other day and it took me a minute. Like, what's the rarest plant you think you have?
Oh, well, I've got three Thai constellations, which I suppose people were kind of rare.
Yeah. I think they're still rare. I think they're super photographed, but I think they're still super rare.
Yeah. I mean, so one of those needs sorting out actually, but the other two, I mean, I did an Instagram video on those the other day and I'm like, showing what they actually look like, which is that you get brown patches on the leaf, parts of the leaves that are cream, because people on Instagram, you don't see that. And it really annoys me because that's just the reality of those plants. It's very, very hard to stop them getting brown patches. So I have three of those. What else do I have that's rare? I'm not really a seeker of super rarity, I would say, but just trying to think. Oh, I've got a couple of other aroids of quite a rare golden form of. Gosh, I'm going to have to look up the name of it for you. My mind's gone completely blank. It's a Schefflera that is not the usual umbrella plant. And I've got a golden form of that, which I was given, which is very nice. I'm a cheapskate. I don't spend loads of money on plants. I'm not the person going out and like going for those plant auctions where aroids go for thousands of pounds. That's not my scene. I guess Hoyas probably. I've got a few rarish Hoyas.
Nice.
Which are my passion, but they were given to me as opposed to being bought for a great deal of money. And I guess it depends whether you're here in the UK or in the US, because I know Hoyas are a lot more popular in the US. Here in the UK, Hoyas are not really that popular. So some of the Hoyas I've got would probably be considered quite rare here, but not in the US. So.
Hoyas, I feel like, are a thing. You either don't have them or you have them and you're obsessed with them. Like, I feel like Hoya is almost a subsect of the houseplant. Of houseplant passion, where people get like really orchids. Into them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like orchids or African violets. They're like a collector's item. I feel like Hoyas and begonias are like that, where they kind of have their own life. They're such a wide variety that, like, you can really dive deep in this, like, one genus kind of.
You do get pulled in. You definitely get pulled in by Hoyas. And again, I tend to start off with tiny cuttings or plants, which then have to be mollycoddled along, and I don't tend to buy a massive plant and start from there. So it's always a bit of a journey. But yeah, once my Hoya collection grows up, it's gonna get crazy.
Because I've got
so many plants. But yeah, they are great. Hoyas are great. And actually, I don't know if you find this. Have you done anything on Hoyas? But the Hoya episode I did with Doug Chamberlain of Vermont Hoyas is, I think, still, it's either my most popular episode ever or it's in the top two or three.
Wow.
So people are mad for Hoyas.
Yeah, I have been in the camp that I don't have any Hoyas. And then a listener actually gifted me a very small cutting, like 2 centimeters or 3 centimeters tall, of a variegated Hindu rope. And since I've had it, it's more than doubled in size, and the new growth being pink, like, it's quickly turning into one of my favorite plants. And so I feel that, like, light
it's
go
starting.
On. It's starting. So I'm like definitely looking for a guest to have on as a Hoya expert, because I want to know more. And also those blooms, I mean, from what I've seen on Instagram or just like the internet, the Hoya blooms are unbelievably weird and gorgeous. So,
and they, some of them smell amazing as well. The linearis blooms just smell lovely. They smell really lovely. So there's lots of pluses to them, and I find them quite easy to look after. It depends on your style of care, but yeah, I find them quite easy. So yeah,
they're definitely watch on out. My list. Yeah,
but watch out for mealybugs on those Hindu ropes, because they're really prone to mealybugs. And if you get mealybugs on them, it's really super hard to get them
to
off
get in there,
because you can imagine all the nooks and crannies.
They're little tortellini crevices.
Yeah, exactly.
The tortellini plant. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Okay, so speaking of like Hoyas and orchids and like different fads, we have a couple of listener questions that I want to pepper into this. So is there like a planty fad that you just like have decided isn't for you?
Well, I guess, as I was saying, paying lots of money for aroids, like whatever the like fashionable aroid is, I'll just be like, and I know I say that as somebody who's got three Tycon selections, what am I talking about? That was kind of chance, but I'm not really, you know, I mean, I don't have a pink princess, for example. I find that whole pink thing, I mean, despite the fact that one of my favorite plants is the tricolor version of Saxifraga stolonifera, which is a really pink plant. I find the whole obsession with pink plants.
Not for you.
It's not really for me. I like pink's okay, but I'm not really bothered about that. And as I say, I almost have a reaction where if something is like the new trendy thing on Instagram, that I'm like, I'm going to do the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Because I'm a contrarian. Uh-huh. So that's why I love gizneriads and African, well, not so much African violets, more Streptocarpus and weird things like primulinas, just because I feel like they're the underdog and they need promoting in a way that philodendron ring of fire doesn't need my help.
Well, it's interesting too, because those are the like tried and true. I mean, those were plants that were super popular in the 70s too, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of the tried and true, like devout houseplant plants.
Yeah. There's a reason why they were popular, right? Yeah. There's a reason why they were popular. And of course, there are other plants that are coming through new to houseplant world, which, for example, the double Z plant hasn't been, relatively speaking, hasn't been on the market for that many years.
And but now they're making black raven ones. Yeah.
Well, that's a strange one because it seems to be that that's much more freely available here in the UK than that is for you guys. But
oh, really?
Yeah. That's been around for quite a while here. So I find that I like to, some of those retro plants are great. And there's a reason why they were popular and why our grandparents grew them.
Yeah. What do you feel about another listener question, which I thought was so interesting, the difference between like British house plant culture and American? Because so for On the Ledge, do you have a really split listener base, States versus the UK?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have a really global audience. I have loads of listeners in North America, but also loads of listeners in the UK. So it's really split. And people are always surprised by that because they think my listenership is going to be all British, but it really is a really big mix. And it's interesting. I don't know that I know particularly what the differences are between the UK and the US. Weird things that you don't seem to have in the US, which I can't understand why, how you can garden without them. So, for example, Americans seem to be very confused about horticultural grit. You don't seem to get horticultural grit. I'm like, what do you use? How can you survive without horticultural grit?
Is that like horticultural charcoal or is that something different?
No, it's like a small grade stone, like,
oh, okay,
maybe anything from like 5 millimeters downwards, which you can use for topping pots or for cactus and succulent mixes.
Yeah.
And whenever I say horticultural grit, Americans always go, and I have to try not to say compost when I'm talking about potting medium, potting
right,
mixes.
Right, I remember that.
To you guys, that just means like something on the compost heap. But beyond that, I don't think there's that much difference. There's actually more of a difference between UK houseplant culture and European houseplant culture.
So interesting.
A lot of our houseplants from the Netherlands, like I imagine right. where you are, it's mainly Florida probably.
Yeah, home. Florida and
that's
California.
The big place. Well, here it's the Netherlands. And over there and in continental Europe, people buy a lot more, spend a lot more money on plants, and they will change out their plants regularly. So if something starts looking bad, they'll just get rid of it. Mm. Whereas in the UK, you know, people will keep a plant like a dead stick. They'll keep it and keep it and keep it. You're like, get another plant.
Yeah.
It's clearly not worked. It's died. So that's a real big difference. And people here, I think, spend less money on plants, but expect to keep them forever. Whereas I think in the Netherlands and other parts of Europe, it's more, they'll ring the changes more often.
That's interesting.
I do get a lot of listeners who will send me a picture and say, it'll either be a picture of a totally healthy plant and they'll be like, oh God, there's this one yellowing leaf.
Right.
Like, calm down. Or you get somebody like sending you a picture of like a dead stick going, what can I do? And you're like, nothing, throw it away. So there's this kind of extremes of ways of dealing with plants. It's just sometimes different personalities, but sometimes it's a cultural thing as well.
Yeah, like almost a cultural approach. Because that's a different fundamental approach, emotional approach almost to plant care that you notice on a cultural level. That's really interesting. That's funny you say that, because I just did an episode on African violets with Lisa, who you've had on your show, the houseplant guru. And the inspiration for the episode was that I had this African violet that was doing so well and blooming all the time, and then just took a turn for the worse. And I like basically killed it. But I was nurturing this like tiny little 6 leaves on it, hoping that I could maybe resuscitate it. And I, after the episode aired, I ordered some new ones and I wanted to shoot this video about it. And I texted Lisa a video of the like plant that I have and what I was planning on doing with it. And then the new 2 plants that I had ordered. And Lisa was like, oh, Maria, I think that little plant is a goner. Like, I think it's done. She was like, I think her words were, I'm not sure if that plant is still alive, but I just, but I just wanted to do right. And I wanted to try and resuscitate it. So I'm totally guilty. I'm totally guilty of that mindset. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Speaking of, do you have plants? You know, we talked about the plants that you like in your space, that work in your space. Do you have plants that you have just realized my space and my personality is not a good fit for this type of plant?
Yeah. Over the years, I've tried different things. I mean, air plants. I've really struggled with air plants.
Interesting.
I can kind of understand the appeal for other people, but for me personally, I don't get a heck of a lot out of them. I love seeing them in other people's homes, but personally caring for them, I don't get a lot of joy out of them. And I've just actually been given one by somebody whose collection I went to visit. And I wonder if it's because I haven't got enough of them. If I had them displayed kind of in a mass, they would look better and I'd care more. But yeah, struggle with air plants. I mean, I've also begonias, Rex begonias, I've tried with many times. I've got one at the minute, which is doing okay, but I've really struggled with those over the years. I am an inveterate underwaterer, which is mostly a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we all, as endlessly we bang on about in the shows, that if you underwater, it's easier to recover a plant that's been underwater than one that's had too much water around the roots. But with ferns, man, I've just given up growing. I can grow ferns, but I've just given up on them because they don't fit my watering regime at all. I've got 1 or 2 ferns, but they're in self-watering pots because they're just not for me. They're just not for me.
I'm so bad with ferns with the self-watering pots that I like forget to refill the self-watering pot.
Well, you've got it. That's the only trouble, isn't it?
And I'm like still killing the fern because I can't even remember, because the self-watering pot is on such a different schedule than like the rest of the watering schedule. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's tricky. So I end up with a lot of plants just because of what I do, and people give me plants and I try things out, but I try not to be too worried if I get rid of things. I mean, I've just taken a cutting. I had this Epipremnemorium, which was, I just wasn't caring for it because I'm not that bothered about that plant in terms of the variegation on it. And I've got another one, which is a slightly different variegation, which I prefer. So I just was like, Jane, get a grip of yourself. Take your cutting of it, which I'm then going to give away, and I'm just going to compost the rest of this plant because I just don't like it. So sometimes you've got to just say, it's fine. I'm just going to compost that plant, and it's not the end of
it. I agree. I think that's an idea people need to get much more comfortable with, especially in the spring. Like, now is the perfect time to kind of go through your collection and see what is working and what isn't, and get rid of it. And if you need to,
give it away. I mean, give it away. To somebody who wants it. Or
I just gave my neighbor a whole bunch of geraniums that we just didn't have highlight space for, even though I love them. And it made his day. He's so excited. Yeah. He doesn't have any plants, you know? So that'll be nice. But also, just getting comfortable with, and you're not a failure, you know, you're not a failure. You're not a bad plant parent. You're actually a better plant parent if you're choosing to make that space, get rid of that plant, and then bring in a plant that works for you. You know, it's all okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the care I give a plant is massively related to A, how visible it is, how much I'm seeing it, but also B, how much I love it. So plants, I always know if I don't particularly love a plant because it will sit there and be completely uncared for. So that's my kind of gauge. But yeah, you've just got to be realistic. And also, one of the dangerous things I think about social media and Instagram, and even possibly podcasts, is that it makes people want more plants, which is a good thing in one sense. But also, I do believe that the number of plants that is right for you as an individual is not the same as the number of plants that is right for somebody else.
Oh, so my gosh,
yes. Right number of plants might be one. And I go and visit, you know, when I went to visit James Wong or Rob Stakovitz or these people who do these amazing experiments, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, yeah, I'm going to have a terrarium with this and that and the other. I'm like, no, I'm not. I do not have time to spend hours tweezering off individual. I ain't got time for that.
Right.
I've got two children. I'm so into the people who do, but I know that for me personally, I'm not going to be able to make time for micromanaging terrariums that are very, very extensively planted, caring for really tricky plants. I'm not going to have time for it. So I try to tailor what I'm growing around what's doable for me. And if I'm realizing that something is taking up too much time, then you've got to reorganize things and find a better way of doing it, because I don't have enough spare time. You know, I mean, I loved talking to Hilton Carter about his collection and how he gets up early and spends the whole of Sunday morning or whatever working on his plants. I just think it has, funnily enough, in the last few weeks, it has happened because obviously lockdown means that we're here all the time. But normally it's me flinging water on a plant as I go past because I realize it's dry, you know, like, oh my God, that's wilting. Quick, put some water on it.
So, and it's all right. Every answer, like,
yeah. There's no right answer.
Your approach is right, and Hilton's approach is right, and my approach is right. And I love that you said, like, you can have one plant or you can have 50, but it's what is the right choice for you and your space. Mm. That's like exactly what you said, is like the whole reason behind the plant parent personality test I just launched. Cause it's like, there's no right starter plant for everyone. There's the right plant for your personality and your setup.
Yeah, completely.
But I think on Instagram, sometimes it's hard because you get into that comparison mode. Sometimes you see all these people that have these terrariums and they have all these things. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, oh God, well, I don't have that. Do I need to have that? Am I less if I don't? And that can kind of happen. What do you think about, what has your experience been, especially just because lately I feel like your Instagram has grown so much and you're showing up on it so much. What has your experience been with the online houseplant community world?
Oh, on the whole, massively, massively positive. As somebody who comes from a journalistic background and has lots of people I know who are journalists, like, I know that I am incredibly lucky. I have never been trolled on any platform or had any negative comments about my appearance or anything like that. And I feel very, very fortunate in that respect, because I know lots of particularly female, but not exclusively female colleagues who have had really negative experiences. So I count myself as very lucky. I think that's partly luck, partly that, well, mainly that the houseplant community is just incredibly positive. I did have a couple of negative comments when I put, I think this was on my Instagram stories, maybe it was a pin or something that I showed, which was an LGBT ally kind of thing. And I got a couple of negative remarks about that from Well, somebody who clearly is very ignorant.
Right.
But that was literally it. I mean, obviously not every review on Apple Podcasts is 5-star, but as we've already said, every show has got your own personality and, you know, you don't have to listen to my show or your show if you don't like the sound of it. So
exactly.
It's incredibly positive. And when I did my 100th episode and I got all these recorded messages from fans that were just telling me what the show had meant to them and the way there's a community built around it. Oh my gosh.
That was so
just
sweet.
I was literally like listening to those things and just being totally in awe of my wonderful listeners. And I always sort of say they are what makes the show. They contribute so much and have shaped the content. So that's amazing. That's really great. So on the whole, a hugely positive experience. And, you know, not everyone's going to, you know, I don't agree with everything I see in the houseplant world, but at the same time, that's true of any interest or hobby that you pursue. There's going to be different sort of beliefs, and you know, it'd be really boring if we all like Gesneriads. So
absolutely,
it's all fine.
I remember where I was when I listened to that 100th episode. I was so like insanely happy for you. I remember I was in San Diego with cats, and I remember like sitting in my friend's living room listening to it and hearing your listeners, but feeling so proud for you. I mean, 100 episodes in a podcast, I don't think people understand the blood, sweat, and tears that go into producing these shows, especially with you and me, where we're kind of used to be one woman bands. And now as the show has grown, you know, our bands have grown, but to get there is such a feat, and I congratulate you. I'm crawling towards 100, but you know, I want to sneak a couple more questions in, but we have to talk about On the Ledge a little bit. So what is your like favorite part of On the Ledge? We're going to do a whole paid separate conversation about the growth and creation of our podcasts for our Patreon audiences, but what's your favorite and least favorite aspects of the show, whether it's producing or airing or scheduling? Yeah.
The least favorite thing, I've had occasions where journalists have said to me, well, what are you doing for your episode in a month's time? I'm like, I don't know. I've got no idea. Like, people think I've got some amazing master plan, and mostly I haven't. Mostly is, you know, like sometimes my assistant who works for me on Tuesday afternoons and Thursday afternoons will say to me, oh, do you want me to do a headliner for tomorrow's episode? And I'll be like, I haven't made it yet. So it's really kind of like hand to mouth oftentimes. And that's because it's really nice to have a really firm plan. But oftentimes I'm just too busy, and it is literally a get it done when it needs to be done. And my husband does say, oh, I hate Fridays, because Fridays is when I'm working late trying to get the show done. And that's why it often comes out really late on a Friday UK time, just because I'm just finishing it off. So that's the kind of the slog is hard. And the positive thing is just that it's opened a lot of doors for me. If I spot somebody on Instagram or somewhere that I think, oh, they've got a cool collection, I can just email that person and say, can I come and see you? Can I interview you? And sometimes they say no, but mostly they say yes. So I get to see things that I wouldn't otherwise see, and to meet either in person or virtually this incredible array of different people. My listeners are just diverse and fascinating. So that's been a real delight to get to know lots of them. And yeah, I mean, who doesn't like being told by somebody that they love what you do? I mean, that's a really positive thing. So most of the time, that's amazing.
Yeah. You're helping people cultivate the like kindest hobby out there. You know, I really do feel like loving plants, like plant care, is one of the kindest hobbies. You just want to like take care of something, you know, it attracts the nicest people.
Indeed.
And it's cool that it's not a full-time job. So the community is so diverse, because doctors care for plants and lawyers care for plants and artists, like they're so equalizing kind of, which is really interesting.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It is. It's a lovely world. It's a really lovely world.
So if you guys are interested, Jane and I are going to have a whole conversation about how we got our podcasts to where they are now. That will be available for our Patreon supporters. So Patreon Plant Friends, keep your eyes peeled for that. Let's see. We should probably wrap up, but I still have a few questions I want to ask. Oh, this one was interesting
Quick
that I wanted to
round.
Ask.
Go on.
Huh?
Quick fire round now.
Fire round. Well, one of the listeners wrote in saying, why do you sometimes speak kind of negatively or poorly about millennials?
So oh, God, I'm feeling, well, I'm now like reeling back in my mind. Like, obviously, I've made 130 odd episodes. Right. So I'm reeling back in my mind thinking, what have I said? Have
I know,
I been
I'm trying
about
to...
millennials. I think I once said something about people who name their plants that might have been a bit derogatory.
Okay.
About that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, obviously, like, I'm not a millennial. How old am I? Am I 46? I'm 46. Mm-hmm. Let's get that right. Yeah, I'm 46. So I'm not a millennial. And obviously, like, I'm never going to be able to truly put myself in the shoes of anybody else,
yeah.
Let alone, you know, a whole generation. I think I've said before that I don't really like the term millennial. But I mean, who am I to say I'm not a millennial? So I don't know. What do you think about that term? I think on the whole, I try to sort of not generalize about people. But I think I have said that I get annoyed by millennials. I think possibly the other thing I might have said is something about, and this may be something that's interesting to you. I think I said this in one of my Patreon episodes, that sometimes for me, the term plant parenting is slightly problematic.
Oh, interesting.
And the reason why... because I have children and have had the experience of being a parent to children.
Okay. Okay.
Sometimes in my darker moments, I might say, you
don't know.
Parents have got no idea what you're talking about.
Interesting.
And I, you know, like I always say to people, if you're about to have a child for the first time, it is like, imagine me saying, well, it's like going to the moon. Well, you've never been to the moon, so you have no idea what it's like. And that's not a negative or positive statement. It's just like, it is so a zillion times removed from anything of your imagination mm-hmm. that you can't imagine what it would be like. And so I wondered whether I was sort of musing in my Patreon episode, whether parents sort of found that demeaning in that looking after a plant is in no way comparable to looking after a child or even a pet. It will sit there for like it doesn't, you know.
That's so interesting.
So I was musing on that and I didn't really come to a conclusion. And I don't really have any massive objections to the term, but I think as a slightly harried parent, I was just kind of thinking, you guys have no idea. And that's probably how it came out. But, you know.
That's really interesting, though, because I am a millennial. I don't think it has anything to do with millennials, though, but I use plant parent. I mean, I just launched a quiz called the Plant Parent Personality yeah. Quiz, and I use that word all the time, and I do not have kids. That's a really interesting thing to think about. I mean, something I say a lot is I feel like it's the first peek that you get into the idea of caring for something. So my yeah, joke that I always make is like, first get a plant, then get a pet, and then have a kid. Like that's the yeah. path that I would like to walk down. And I feel yep. because you're so self-involved as a human before you have anything to care for that, you know, yeah. I'm such a self-involved person, millennial, especially because I travel so much. So like I literally am just, you know, before my plant care, I was just accustomed to literally only caring about myself and how I live. Obviously caring about my friends too, but like my weekly, daily responsibilities revolved around me, that when I started to have plants, it did open my heart. Like a part of my heart that was never opened a little bit because all of a sudden I was thinking about something else living besides me. And even though it's so small, I mean, I could totally understand how a parent would be like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Or like that doesn't make any sense because of course it's nothing to do with a kid. I used to babysit a lot. So it is absolutely nothing to do with childcare, but it's like the first step. And then a pet would be the next step. But also a pet is not a child, but at least a pet is way more than a plant. So that's really interesting. You've given me something to think about.
A couple of listeners sort of commented and they said, Jane, you're overthinking it. It's just exactly what you said.
Yeah.
It's like nurturing something. And that's absolutely right. I mean, as I say, it's just,
so interesting.
It's probably a darker moment of like dealing with some difficult parenting issue. I mean, I'm constantly saying to my friends who are also parents, God, I really wish they told us that this was going to be part of the deal, like an X, Y, or Z issue that we're all going through. And yeah, so it's an interesting one. But as I say, that's only just me as an overtired parent just speaking out in anger.
No, 100%. That makes so much sense. And I've never thought about it through that lens. So I'm thankful you shared that because that's really interesting.
Going back to the millennials, what I would say is what I love about the podcast world and the houseplant world is that actually there are people, you know, I've had messages from like 12-year-olds who listen to the show and from 80-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this huge spectrum of people. And yes, a lot of them are in their 20s and 30s, but there are lots of people. When I go and give talks to gardening societies, that I'm probably the youngest person in the room at those gatherings. In a village hall somewhere. And they're always amazed when I talk to them about houseplants that there's all these people in their 20s who are getting into these plants that they grew over many decades. So yeah, there's room for everybody. That's
absolutely
what I like.
And that's fun too. I mean, you can connect with people of different generations through this passion.
Yeah. And there's a real fount of knowledge out there of older plant yes. growers who aren't on Instagram. I mean, that's the real thing that, you know, it's difficult to get to those people because they're just not as accessible as people who are on social media. But it's so worth it, because that's why I encourage people to join plant societies, because that's where you find those people.
Yeah.
Tap into their expertise and buy their excellent plants.
I know, absolutely. Okay, one last listener question and then we'll wrap up. What other plant podcasts do you listen to if you do have time to listen to podcasts?
Well, obviously, Bloom and Grow Radio.
obviously.
And I've also, there's Plant Daddies who are based out of, the Plant Daddies who are based out of, I think, Seattle. I've been on their show and I love their show, and they're real plant geeks. I mean, they won't be embarrass me to say that, and I love listening to them. I like the fact they've got it, kind of makes me wish I had a co-host though. I like the way they bounce off each other, and that's really nice. And then sort of in the wider plant world, I love Plant Rama with CL Fornari and I can't think of the other lady's name, but I love that. They're great, talking about houseplants and foraging and other things that I love. I'm going to miss out some major ones here and annoy myself, but what else do I listen to? But there's some good British gardening podcasts. There's one called Gardens, Weeds and Words by a guy called Andrew O'Brien, which is very good. And if you want a really, this is an outdoor gardening one, but if you want a really calming voice, Ben Dark's podcast is called The Garden Log, and he's a head gardener in a private estate in the UK, and it's just him talking about his gardening week, and it's so relaxing, and he's got such a lovely voice. It's so nice. So
do you have podcasts outside the gardening space that you like to listen to?
Well, you know what? I got into podcasting through Serial, like every other person in the universe. And I did really get into true crime podcasts. And my husband's always joking because he'll put on a really silly American accent and start saying, "Oh, you're listening to true crime." And I love listening to true crime podcasts. But then there's not that many that I actually listen to regularly now. I go through phases with true crime, and I haven't listened to any of those recently. I love Reply All, you know, classic ones that everybody listens to. There's one called, a British podcast called Answer Me This, which has been running for years, which is amazing. And what else? Is there anything else? And there's a really good fiction podcast, which I love, called Girl in Space, which is by somebody who also does a podcast called Right Now, which is about writing. And that's really good. There's loads more.
Finally, let's talk about On the Ledge. So what's next for On the Ledge? You're making so much quarantine content. You do your annual sew along. What else is in the books for you guys in 2020? Well,
stumbling along, as I've just said, I don't really plan. So who knows? But yeah. I think that I'm just, well, unfortunately, some of the things that were planned have been cancelled. So for example, I was due to give a talk or be interviewed at the Chelsea Flower Show. Not happening.
I'm sorry.
I would have done a big thing at the, I would have done lots of interviews for the show at the Chelsea Flower Show, which is obviously not happening. And I would have been planning some more visits, which I've kind of put on ice for the moment. So lots of things have been put on hold. I did, fortunately, just before all this kicked off, I'd done quite a bit of interviewing and visiting. So I've got some episodes coming up. One on Clivias / Clivias, depending on how you pronounce it, which is one of those old fashioned plants, which is coming back in. And also Aspidistras, another old fashioned plant. So I've got those ones coming up. And ages ago, I did a kind of a week where I did, like, I dropped 5-minute episodes, one every day on a theme. And I'm going to planning to do a diva week.
Ooh, that's fun.
Like Alocasia Poly and things like that. But
I love that. That's great. Yeah, so where can everyone go find you and listen to your show and find you on Instagram for your IGTV videos that you've been making?
Annoyingly, I don't have the same handles for everything. But yeah, so janeperrone.com is just for everything. You can listen and subscribe there. My Instagram is j.l.perrone. Unfortunately, Jane Perrone was already taken by another Jane Perrone. There are more of us. And then on Twitter, I'm at Jane Perrone, where I do Houseplant Hour on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock GMT, which is a fun Twitter chat. And that's about it. Yeah. So yeah, come and find me. And
you can find the podcast on iTunes under On the Ledge.
Yes. There's another podcast called On the Ledge, which is about the Ontario legislature or something.
Oh,
so
boy.
You'll be able to tell the difference. It's fine. Not that one. No.
She's got a lot of plants in her logo, yeah. So you'll figure it out. Well, thank you, Jade. This was such a great talk. I'm so happy we finally got to connect.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Maria.
Thank you so much to Jane. I cannot believe it took 3 years for us to finally get together. We have been emailing behind the scenes probably for 2 years now trying to schedule this, but it was worth the wait. I love her show. She's such a great lady. I hope to get to England one day to meet her in real life. You can go check out her podcast at On the Ledge Podcast on your preferred podcast player, and all of her links are in the show notes as well. Thank you again to our Patreon supporters. You are amazing. Check your email inboxes this week to receive that extra free episode that we made for you. And also, I am continuing our virtual Plant Friend IRL hangouts for our Patreon subscribers. So keep your eyes peeled for those invites as well. It's been so fun. We've been having Zoom calls with people from literally all over the world. It's been so great to see all of your faces and get to know you all better. And thank you again to Modern Sprout, today's sponsor. So if you need gifts for Mother's Day or gifts for yourself, plant friends, Modern Sprout makes amazing grow lights, amazing grow kits, seed starter kits that you can then plant in your garden, indoor hydroponic grow kits, and amazing plant accessories. They've got something truly for everyone on their website. So check it out at modernsprout.com and use the code 15bloom for 15% off at checkout. So once again, that's code 15bloom for 15% off at checkout at modernsprout.com. My sweet plant friends, I hope you are staying sane. I hope you are incorporating plant care in your stress relief techniques and you are enjoying the growing season and our plants waking up, because I certainly am. If you haven't started anything from seed yet, I would highly recommend it. It has been bringing me a lot of joy. And until next time, my sweet plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind the scenes, sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me, because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, propagate knowledge and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.